You can't get health if health is the main thing you want. You can't save civilization if your main goal is saving civilization. Anytime there was a real powerful, fresh outpouring of the Spirit on the church, one of the markers of that has been the breaking down of barriers, rich and poor, male and female, black and white, slave and free. But somehow you can't get diversity if your main goal is diversity.
That is a deep truth, sometimes called the paradox of hedonism.
Huh.
This is the idea that hedonists classically thought that happiness was the great good and the thing that we all do strive for and should strive for. But it was very quickly pointed out that if you single-mindedly make your decisions so as to achieve the greatest happiness possible for yourself, you are very unlikely to achieve it.
Hey, you probably noticed from the date in the corner that this was filmed a while back, but it was so good we wanted to bring it back to your attention. Let us know what you think in the comments. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel or head over to becomenew.com if you want more content like this. Now back to John.
Man, I just got to tell you, I'm loving this moment. I'm sitting with one of my best friends in the world, Mark Nelson. This is his backyard. He's a philosopher. He got his PhD at Notre Dame, taught at University of Leeds for a period of time, which is where J.R.R. Tolkien was.
Correct.
And now teaches philosophy at Westmont. We are sitting in his backyard in Santa Barbara. You will notice the swimming pool. It's like being with a movie star. He's living the dream. And this is the person that I go to so often if there's an issue that involves philosophy or just generally deep thought. Mark is a wonderful thinker and a wonderful teacher. Say a word about your use of pencils in teaching.
Oh, well, this is one of my better ideas, I have to say. I give out pencils as prizes for good answers on tests or good questions in class. And at my own considerable expense, I've had customized pencils created. Some will say John Stuart Mill or Thomas Aquinas. If you do a good, a special favor for me, you might get the gold pencil, which is Mark's special friend.
I have one of those.
You do?
Yeah.
One of few. People who have those.
Yeah.
There's a red pencil that says, "You have disappointed Mark." I don't give those out very often.
But you have given them out.
I have.
Story, yeah. Yep. Yeah. So if somebody writes in a really wonderful comment today, something insightful or deeply moving, might they get a pencil?
Oh, they could easily get a pencil.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's keep watching.
But if they send in a horrible comment, they get a red pencil.
Red pencil. Yeah. You don't want that. You do. No, I don't have a red pencil. So here's what I thought we might talk about today. We've been working through Screwtape Letters, and these are thoughts by C.S. Lewis, not actually in Screwtape Letters, but about hope and despair. We were talking earlier today about people wrestling with doubt and how prominent that seems to be right now. And Mark, you were saying you have some people who feel like they have forgotten how to believe. And so I thought I would just read a bit about hope from C.S. Lewis and then would love to hear you respond to it. And help us think, how do we live with hope in a world that is increasingly filled with despair? And so the invitation today is to be a person of hope. Lewis writes that hope is one of the theological virtues. This means that a continual looking forward to the eternal world is not, as some modern people think, a form of escapism or wishful thinking, but one of the things a Christian is meant to do. It does not mean that we're to leave the present world as it is. If you read history, you will find the Christians who did the most for the present world were just those who thought the most of the next. The apostles themselves, who set on foot the conversion of the Roman Empire. The great ones who built up the Middle Ages, the English evangelicals who abolished the slave trade, all left their mark on earth precisely because their minds were occupied with heaven. It is since Christians have largely ceased to think of the other world that they have become so ineffective in this. Aim at heaven and you get earth thrown in, so to speak. Aim at earth and you will get neither. It seems a strange rule, but something like it can be seen at work in other matters. Health is a great blessing, but the moment you make health one of your main direct objects, you start becoming a crank and imagining there is something wrong with you. You are only likely to get health provided you want other things more. Food, games, work, fun, open air. In the same way, this interesting thought, we shall never save civilization as long as civilization is our main object. We must learn to want something else more. and then this. Most of us find it very difficult to want heaven at all, except insofar as heaven means meeting again our friends who have died. One reason for this difficulty is that we have not been trained. Our whole education tends to fix our minds on this world. Another reason is, when the real want for heaven is present in us, we do not recognize it. Most people, if they had really learned to look into their own hearts, would know that they do want, and want acutely, something that cannot be had in this world. There are all sorts of things in this world that offer to give it to you, but they never quite keep their promise. So I will stop with that. Hope is something that we cannot let go of, but that is so difficult for so many of us. And Mark, I'd just love to have your response.
Oh, gosh. There's so much in that passage.
Isn't there?
Yeah.
Oh.
Gosh, in no particular order, I'm really struck by that, by his thought there at the end, that we have these desires, these yearnings in us that we almost don't even recognize.
Yeah.
We don't even know what they're for. And I'll put in a plug here for Lewis's spiritual autobiography, Surprised by Joy, because that's one of the that's practically the theme of the book. And very early on, he recounts these experiences of a kind of yearning for something he did not know what, but he knew it was not of this world. It brought a kind of pain, but there was even, he even wanted it because of the painful longing.
Yeah.
For him, that was a pointer. That was a pointer that, yes, there is something not of this world that is meant to be our heart's desire, that we were created for.
And so that idea of even when I find joy in something, there's a longing in it that's not yet fulfilled. There's something hopeful in that, he's saying, because if there's a longing for something, most likely that longing is there because that something is there.
That's right. And he goes on and qualifies it, and he will admit that it's not definitive proof that it's there, but that it would be very strange, for example, to find yourself a fish, and yearning for water. Water is its natural habitat, but in a world where water didn't exist.
Yeah.
But also like this earlier thought that the Christians who have made the most difference were the ones whose sights were not set completely on this world, that their eyes were set on heaven, their minds were set on heaven. We do think about it. I think it's easy to find fault with or poke holes in the kind of childish pictures of heaven, streets of gold and so forth.
Yeah.
Maybe we do that at our peril, because unless we've got something better to replace it with.
Yes.
Yes, if we forget that our destiny is a transcendent one, we will be losing something.
Yeah, I remember an expression when I was a kid, you're so heavenly-minded that you're no earthly good.
Sure.
But he's saying it's actually, although that might happen, kind of the other way around. And there is a thought, I don't know that I've ever thought about this before, but it's in there, in this writing. I'd love to hear your thoughts around it. You can't get health if health is the main thing you want. You can't save civilization if your main goal is saving civilization. I thought also about diversity and inclusivity. We talk about that a lot in these days. And I remember reading a while ago that anytime there was a real powerful, fresh outpouring of the Spirit on the church, one of the markers of that has been the breaking down of barriers, rich and poor, male and female, black and white, slave and free. But somehow you can't get diversity if your main goal is diversity. It's a byproduct of something else. And there's so many goods where that seems to be the case. There has to be something larger that makes this thing meaningful. And if I make this thing the main object, the meaning and goodness and energy is somehow lost. I'm not saying that well, but
no, I think that that is a deep truth. Where it shows up in philosophy is sometimes called the paradox of hedonism.
Huh.
This is the idea that hedonists classically thought that happiness was the great good and the thing that we all do strive for and should strive for. But it was very quickly pointed out that if you single-mindedly make your decisions so as to achieve the greatest happiness possible for yourself,
mm-hmm.
You are very unlikely to achieve it.
Huh.
Just think about if your goal when you're going out on a date is to have the best possible experience that you can, you know, this is going to be the best date, and you make all your decisions accordingly, it'll be terrible.
Huh.
That what you should do is just aim to, I want to go out with my friend. I want to have a nice meal.
And by the way, Mark was a prolific dater. We knew each other from college days. I've known him since we were both teenagers, and we went on double dates, and he was a remarkable dater, so he knows what he's talking about.
It's true.
Yeah.
Your
can't
goal,
aim at happiness.
You can't aim at happiness. Or if you do aim at happiness, you are unlikely to get it. If you aim at a great date, it'll be it might well be a disaster.
I've thought sometimes heaven itself is a bit like that. For those of us who grew up in a way of explaining the gospel that said, if you were to die tonight, how do you make sure you get to heaven? That almost becomes a form of making your eternal happiness your ultimate goal.
Hmm.
And understanding the gospel as the offer of life together with God right now as a free gift of grace, which death cannot interrupt, is a different thing than saying there's a big pleasure factory up in the sky and make your main goal trying to get there. In a way, heaven is even has that same quality. It's a byproduct of the pursuit of another great transcendent good.
And it really looks like that's why some of these reformers and missionaries and people who built hospitals and people who served the poor were so effective.
So one of the question, one way of thinking about the opposite of hope is despair. And I remember you talking about a creature that I think you invented, the weasel of despair. And a lot of people wrestle with hope and belief and despair. So tell us about the weasel of despair.
The weasel of despair, and he has many fans, including at Westmont College, comes from a little diagram I used to draw for my students. I felt that many of them had a kind of wrong-headed and ultimately unhelpful picture of belief. I think a lot of my students understood belief as being like a chain with many separate links, and you hold on to it. Each of your beliefs, theological, philosophical, scientific, was a separate link on that chain. And each of them supports some other link that you're holding on for dear life. The problem with that, of course, is if just one link on that chain breaks, fall to your death. And so I had illustrated it with, you know, holding on to the chain of belief suspended over the cliff of doubt above the rocks of despair. And there were human bones and skulls and things down there, other people who had crashed and died. And on the rocks of despair was the weasel of ineptitude.
Ah, sorry, the weasel of ineptitude.
Yes, but the weasel of ineptitude is there on the rocks of despair.
Gotcha.
But yes, that's one of my better creations.
So if we don't want that, what's the better way of thinking about faith and belief and hope?
I think a better way of thinking about it is to drop the separate links of chain picture.
Mm-hmm.
And substitute for something like concentric circles, circles within circles extending outward. And what's important is at the center, the next most important things are in the next ring,
mm-hmm.
so on and so forth. I think this is true generally, but what it means is you can change things in the outer rings, the peripheral beliefs, without necessarily affecting things in the inner rings.
Yeah.
And the things you have at the core will be largely immune from change when you change your beliefs in the outer rings. And the good thing about that is then, you know, if you come to think that a certain literal interpretation of scripture can't be true, it doesn't have to imperil the whole, your whole belief system.
There can still be a God.
You can still be a God. You know,
yeah.
What should we have at the center? Well, I don't know. Different Christians will have different accounts of this. I kind of think that the Apostles' Creed might be good. Or maybe some people would say, actually, it should just be Jesus. Jesus is at the core. It's not a set of propositions. It's a person.
Well, putting Jesus at the core is not a bad place to leave it. So, Mark, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Hey, if you enjoyed that video, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes from John Ortberg or Become New. You can also head to our website, becomenew.com, where we have a bunch more resources you might be interested in, like free downloads, books, and a library of videos for you to explore, learning how to grow spiritually one day at a time. If you've got a prayer request, you can text it to us at 855-888-0444, and you'll receive a written response from someone on our team who will pray for you. You can also text the word BECOME to that same number to receive text alerts whenever we drop a new video. Glad that you're here, and we'll catch you next time.